Atari Now, February 2026. News and homebrews for all Atari systems and more. Into the vertical blind. Generation Atari. All right, what are we doing first, Steve? We're going to start out with an oldie but an oldie, watching, playing, reading, programming.
Sounds good.
This is where we talk about the things of the last month we've been watching, playing, reading, and programming. And they should have something to do with what we're talking about here.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes they don't.
Sometimes it's so what have you been watching, Jeff?
My favorite thing that I watched, one of the few things that I watched from start to end, was The Secret Mall Apartment.
Oh my God, I watched Secret Mall Apartment too. What an awesome documentary.
Those are my peeps.
So this is a documentary about, it's set in Providence, Rhode Island, when a new mall opened, I think in like 1999 or something.
Right.
And the new mall was part of some development that was knocking down some low-cost housing that was nearby. And there were some artists that were from RISD, which is the Rhode Island Institute of Design. The Rhode Island Institute of Design. They decide to make... to sneak in, and they find a place in the new mall where they can build a secret apartment. And they think they're going to get caught after a week. And it actually turns out that they don't get caught for years.
And they almost are considering it an art installation. No one's living there, but they are living there in a sense. They can play PlayStation there.
Yeah.
They get power from a power cord.
What's funny about it though is that it happened in like 2001, and then I think it ended in like 2004 or 2005. But the documentary came out last year in 2005, although the date on was 2025, even though the date is 2024, it came out 2025. The funny thing is it almost needed 20 years to percolate before it made sense, because now the comment on the mall with all the dead malls around is a very interesting story that makes sense in 2025 way more than it did in 2001.
And it's just, I just love the fact that these people, these artists are doing art everywhere for no money, just to help people.
I know, just to help people. It's so awesome.
Anyway, it's a great watch.
Secret Mall Apartment is a great watch, and there is a video game tie-in because they play PlayStation in the...
They do play PlayStation.
I guess a PlayStation 2, but...
It's a PS2.
Okay, what else?
I'm unfortunately still watching The Curse of Oak Island, and they've really just found wood and iron. And video versions of The Retro Hour and This Week on Retro.
Yeah, I do watch those
every week.
Those pretty much, I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube videos. Those are two of them. Also, a few of the other fellow podcasters and stuff we watch as well.
I watch a little BCB when I'm working. A whole bunch of videos on UFOs, aliens, ghosts, anything like that I can find.
Okay. All right.
How about planes?
You know, the problem with ghost videos and UFO videos now is with like generative AI, they're just, every place is haunted and UFOs are all
over. So I don't watch those.
Okay. So playing, what are you playing, Jeff?
I'm on Linux now and I don't have much time for games because I'm working really hard, but I play a game called Isle Riot Solitaire. It's Klondike Solitaire with stats.
Oh, nice.
I play that like probably 10 games a day.
What kind of stats?
It just tells you like how fast you did it, how many wins. It's not that much stats. I'm looking for more stats, but it's a great solitaire game. Just plain Klondike Solitaire with a little bit of stats, just enough to keep me playing. And then I play a bunch of Atari ST and 8-bit arcade shooters for some countdown videos.
Oh, some videos, yeah, you're doing. So, I mean, Solitaire is awesome. Now, you're playing that because you moved to Linux, right?
I had Solitaire on Windows, too. I just didn't play it. But the cool thing about Linux is there's just like a directory of software you can download really easily. No one's asking for money, although you can pay them if you want to, and they deserve it. And I just found the Solitar game that I love. And so that's it. Yeah, I have other games on here too, but this is what I play at the moment.
So, I mean, since the last time we recorded, I've been playing, I played Stonekeep on the PC. So it's a 1995.
Which you gave to me.
Yeah, I gave you a copy. It's great. It's like, it was one of the, it was a PC RPG made right when the CD sort of multimedia video, you know, like streaming video games were turning into 3D games, right? So it was, and it was started way before that. And so it got, it didn't get great reviews when it came out. There's some, I looked and it wasn't as bad as I thought, but it wasn't great. And I remember it being a disappointment when it came out. But playing it now, it's like this interestingly handcrafted RPG. I made it to like level 5 of the dungeon, and then I kind of, when a work started again, I kind of begged off, but it was really fun. And I think, you know, it's a big box PC game. It comes in a nice big box. I would suggest that people replay Stonekeep from the PC game era, because we're getting into our PC game era now. Yeah. Our retro window is moving as well, like everybody else's. And we are sort of in the 90s. I'm sort of in the 90s in my headspace now. And games like Stonekeep and the second Dungeon Master 2 and all those are kind of in my... And the Might and Magics and all those are kind of in my headspace.
You know what? Speaking of Might and Magic, there's a great... not video game news from Time Machine.
No, they create world.
New
World Computing.
New World Computing, just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, let me go back and say like the They Create Worlds has had some amazing episodes lately. One about Mastertronic. They have a new one about Virgin. They did a 3-part about Commodore, which I'm not a Commodore fan in any way whatsoever, but they still made it fascinating. I can see why Commodore fans are so.
We just didn't have the machines.
They're as wounded about Commodore as we are about Atari.
They are completely.
So I can see it now.
I get it. We're all wounded and stuff.
It's all. Show me on the doll where Commodore touched. Because it's just like.
Okay, what you need to do, we need an AI video of Commodore touching the doll.
No, we're not making AI. No more AI.
No more AI. Okay, reading.
Other game I'm playing, though, obsessively is Outer Worlds 2 on the PlayStation 5. It's a game by Obsidian. Tim Kaine did a little bit of writing for it, but Obsidian did Pillars of Eternity. They did Fallout New Vegas. They did another Avowed, which is another RPG. They're absolutely amazing role-playing games in the vein of Knights of the Old Republic, where there's lots of different fighting options and also conversations in your total overall story. This game is a distillation of the original Outer Worlds, which was good, which I really liked. But this Outer Worlds 2, I have to say, is quite possibly the best game I've ever played. So I know that's saying a lot because I've played a lot of games, but I am enjoying it more than... It has so many memorable moments that you make yourself because of the way you can play almost any way you want. It's incredible. And I know it's getting good reviews, but not a lot of good sales. I would tell you, like it is a travesty. It's such a good game. Anyway... Wow. That's enough about Outer Worlds. I'll throw up some pictures on the screen of Outer Worlds as I...
Well, you can make a video of it too, you know.
I don't want to make a video about it.
Okay.
I don't have... I mean, I could, but I have to write it, and I'm not really sure that I have the wherewithal to write something about Outer Worlds 2.
No, what I mean is you put a little bit of video of it.
I don't have any video of it, but I have some pictures that I...
You know what, Steve? We'll put some pictures up.
Yeah, I can put some screenshots that I took, okay?
Okay, so what's next?
Reading. So what are you reading, Jeff?
I'm reading a book by Chuck Klosterman called Raised in Captivity.
Oh, what's that about?
It's a bunch of short stories, and I bought it on paperback, read it, and now I'm listening to it, and listening to it is even better because all the authors and various comedians actually read these stories. And
Are they short stories?
I think they're all fictional. They're all sort of in the, like, ground, I would say... they're like Black Mirror, but grounded in not technology, really. So it's like Black Mirror, but without the technology. One obvious example of one of them is that there's this young power pop band that's just hasn't really had a hit yet, but they've been, you know, got a few little things, just like every band from the 80s and 90s that didn't get a hit. And suddenly, they start getting one of their older songs just starts doing really, really well, getting all this airplay on the internet and stuff like that, and they're trying to figure out why, and they discover that it's neo-Nazis that really love their songs. It's sort of like their thing about, like, what do they do about that? It's pretty funny.
Funny. I am reading a book called The Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion, and it is about grief. So that's the opposite of what you're reading right now, but it is fantastic.
Oh, there's really, really well. Raised in captivity, too. But okay, that sounds like a great book, Steve. I think you told me about it before. I kind of want to read that.
Programming.
What are you programming right now, Steve?
So the last thing I was programming a game, a 7800 version of Spacescape from the book Arcade. Sort of a 3D shooter thing. I got a lot of parlor tricks done to make it kind of look like Spacescape so I could use it for a video. And then I was like, well, this could be a game. It would be a game in the vein of Afterburner or, what's the one with the guy flies across the screen, the Sega one?
Space Harrier.
Is in a vein where you're looking at it's scaled and you're looking from a front view. The thing that I found out about is I have it so you can move all the way up the screen and all the way down like 9 different zones. It makes it almost impossible to figure out how to shoot anything as a company use. Like, it needs to only be a very small area that you're able to move in or it doesn't work. But I did that and it sort of halted because I also need a pokey music score for it, a good one.
Right.
And so I want to teach myself how to make pokey music before I can finish a version of that game that I'm happy with. So, but that's my goal is this year to finish that game with a pokey music soundtrack. That's my real goal.
I have a game programming goal. So I'm still working on STAS and I just started some GFA playing with the GI sound tool, which is just this amazing sound driver, not music yet, I really fear, but sound effects driver for the ST, where they added all these sort of C64 style envelopes and things that you can do to make sounds really cool. And so now I want to find a way to make a little space game or something on the ST, on the GFA that uses the sound. And only ST, not STE. Obviously, it couldn't be played on the STE, but I got to get it to work in GFA. So that's what I'm working on. I also have my STAS game.
Oh, yeah.
A version of Amidar/KidGrid that I'm working on. That's back in production again, but I haven't got much done. I'm really... A lot of stuff's going on, and I haven't had much time to do it.
Well, I'm also kind of taking kind of a break too.
Yeah.
So I'm reevaluating like the amount of videos made last year. Did a lot of like documentary style stuff on people that, I mean, none of it was very well received or watched, and yeah. I'm kind of rethinking like, what do I really want to make? And do I care if anyone was? I enjoyed making
right,
it.
If you enjoy
it. Does it matter if no one watched it? Kind of. It does matter to me a little bit, which of course is a problem because it shouldn't. But I'm reevaluating like, why spend? I mean, a video, some of those long form documentary videos take about an hour, a minute to edit. And, you know, when it's 40 minutes long, that's 40 hours, right? And that's a lot of time to spend on something. That I can be proud of, but what am I doing it for? Do I care if people watch it? Maybe I don't. Maybe it's just a body of work.
Steve, it's art for art's sake.
Yeah, maybe that's it. And maybe, you know, but there's a part of me that's like, I wish people would watch them. So, anyway, let's go on to our news.
All right. So, Atari news. Retro news.
But this is Atari Now, right now. Atari Now. You know, this is kind of turning into the Overscan. And which is Overscan was a distilled version of the Into the Vertical Blank podcast. It's literally kind of turning into the Vertical Blank without the stories, because the stories are now separate. But okay, so the first news item is an Atari ST Mini, and I actually haven't read anything about this. I'm unprepared, but this is on Tom's Hardware, right?
Right. This is an FPGA Atari ST STE Mini. I don't know if there's a Falcon Core yet, but it is. There's only a couple of them available at the moment.
About $400.
But all they need to do is, it's about 400, about 350 euros, about $400 by Dennis Shaw. And you can, hopefully, eventually, it'll get down lower. And maybe Atari's watching this, and they can even get it lower and actually have someone who made an ST Mini.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't want an ST Mini. I want an ST Maxi. You know, I want an Amiga, an A1200.
Well, this has a real keyboard on it, though.
Oh, it does?
Yeah, check
it out. Oh, he said mini, but I guess it doesn't have
mini. Just means it's small. It doesn't have... It just doesn't have the extra...
Oh, I'm good. I'm good on it then. It's just... Okay, so you're saying it does have a keyboard.
It's a real keyboard. Yeah.
Okay, with a real keyboard, then I'm good. Okay.
Of course.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I like the idea of... I did like the idea of the Amiga 1200 that is a lot, that does ST stuff, but I'd rather be the other way around. I'd rather be an STE that also does the Amiga. Because I love the... So you have to admit, the design of the ST is one of the most beautiful cases created. And the Amiga is a better computer, don't get me wrong. But it looks... bizarre to me, and the ST is a beautiful machine, even though the innards are not quite as good.
Well, the Amiga 500 kind of looks like an ST. Like after they made the Amiga 1000 in a box,
you have to give the ST credit where it's credit due, and the industrial design of the case is
beautiful.
Beautiful, and that to me, there's a lot of nuance there. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of nuance to people who grew up with Commodore and Amiga, and they like their nuances too. But for me, I want the ST.
It's just got the beautiful lines of. Okay, next up.
Next up is the Strong Museum, which is in Rochester, New York, has acquired Kurt Wendel's Atari Museum collection, which is absolutely amazing, because Kurt passed away a few years ago. Kurt passed away a few years ago after we interviewed him.
Right.
We have the final interview of Kurt Wendel. I think it's his final interview. Someday we were going to put out the uncut version because I sent
it all to Marty.
Oh, okay, good.
So I don't know if he has or he kept it or not.
We may do, because Kurt was an icon in the Atari community, somewhat controversial in some ways, but also he, in the 90s, he went and, I want to say dumpster diving, it wasn't just dumpster diving, he went and collected a bunch of the Atari cast-offs and things that the company threw away, archives that he had found. It wasn't just, they call it dumpster diving, but he didn't like that. I don't think he liked that term, because he didn't just dive in dumpsters. He went and really searched and found all this old Atari documentation that was just being thrown away at the time. And that was his Atari Museum. And just a very small amount of the Atari Museum got online. Kurt had other things to do. You know, this wasn't his full-time job. It wasn't even a job at the time. You couldn't have a job,
there was no job
doing Atari. Not like Atari now, where like some stalwarts of the Atari community now actually work for Atari. That would have been Kurt Wendel He also has some issues with the new Atari too, because they stole money from him, but not this version of the new Atari. Kurt would have been one of those people probably working with them to capture the history of Atari. But this archive at the Strong Museum is amazing. Now I think what happens at the Strong Museum is if you're a researcher, you can go and look at you can make an appointment to look at their archives. And it's different from what they put on the museum floor. I don't know much about it. One day I would love to get to the Strong Museum and check it out. That's one of my goals in life, is to get there and take a look. So great news though, because having Kurt's Atari Museum stuff in an actual museum to be curated by actual museum curators is going to be awesome.
Okay, so from like an awesome set of news to something
weird. Yeah. So go. I think just look at this first. Could you show picture. Okay. So just, this is in our notes. You can see how we have notes for our podcast here. I saw this advertisement on Facebook, and it's for you to invest in the Atari Hotel. So you heard that the Atari Hotel, which is going to be a whole line of hotels all around the world, then there's going to be in Las Vegas, and now there's just one in Phoenix, a single hotel in Phoenix. But you can invest, and you get, like, there's different levels of investment, and this is very, you can kind of see that the levels of investment are, you might be able to read this better than I can.
Breakout champion. Okay, I got it.
That's like 500 bucks or something. I think it's off the page.
I got
to
go over here.
I think that was $500. So what this tells me is they need to raise some money fast for this hotel. I don't know what this is. Someone else go look at it. I'm not going to interpret what it is. I'm going to say that this came up on my Facebook, and instantly I was like, oh, This is not the new Atari doing. This is someone else, right?
This is
Atari Hotels. So if you're interested in investing in the Atari Hotels, go check it out. I just want to say that these rewards are not really anything. But if those are things that you like, that you think are fascinating and you want to invest, go ahead and do it. But I'm just, this is my news is they're trying to raise money. That's what they're trying to do.
Right, exactly. So let's go on to some better news.
Better news, go ahead.
So there is a new 700 multi-cart. This is not the one that works in the 2600 and 700 Plus. This is the 700 game drive by the same person that did the first Jaguar and Lynx game drive.
Shoot.
So it's retro, retro HQ. This here's just a summary of some of what it does. It's got a lot in audio. It's got dual Pokey compatible audio. It's got the YM2151 compatible audio. It has a Kovox compatible audio. It has RGB video out from the cartridge itself.
Wow.
You can break into your games. You can save the state. You can load states. You can enable cheats or just return to the game menu and load another game. There's a serial port on the side, which allows you to upload and run code directly from your PC.
Right.
And this is Retro HQ's page about the
It's beautiful.
Game drive.
Expensive, but it's beautiful.
Not cheap. But these guys do a great job of their
stuff. This does not work with the 7800 Plus.
Nope. No, this is not the one that works with
the only one that those work is if you, there's a little ROM that loads up, I think, in the root. If you swap that out with the game ROM, it'll work.
Correct.
That's what I do.
No menu.
But that would ruin the game drive's functionality. So, I do hope there's another new Atari 2600 cart that I think has a screen on it now that you can load it up. I'm not sure what that's called, but this is awesome. What it needs is you to be able to select on the screen to select the resident ROM so that you could load it onto a 700 plus.
This one's still amazing. That's my thing that I do have that set, a real 7800 one that does that, and that's compatible with the plus system.
Right, I do too. I have the thing's called the Dragonfly.
Yes,
the Dragonfly cart, which works with the 2600 plus, and I can play my I've tested my homebrew game, a couple of my homebrew games on there.
All right, so and
speaking of homebrew. So Zero Page Homebrew awards came out yesterday. The award voting came out yesterday. Everyone go vote for your favorite games. Go look it, we'll put the link in, vote for your favorite games. This is not I'm not giving any you I'm not saying vote for our game, but I'm going to say this. They somehow, Atari 700 work in progress section, Last Stand Halloween, which is the game that we made, is up for voting.
Last Stand Halloween.
There it is. Now, I'm not going to say vote for it. Don't vote for it. Go play all of the games in all the categories. Vote because this is amazing. Zero Page Homebrew had some problem before Christmas. They're now back. These homebrew awards are amazing. Go play all these games. Play it. And if you think Last Stand Halloween is the best and worth it, vote for it. I figure that, it's probably not. There's probably some other game on here that's way better. But you decide for yourself. Everyone go play the games and vote in the Zero Page Homebrew Awards. Very happy that to even be mentioned in this fantastic. In any way whatsoever. It's really nice. But please go play the games and vote for your favorites.
That's fantastic.
It's cool. I was very happy about that. It made me feel good. Like, oh wait, I was gonna quit doing it, and then I'm like, I'm gonna quit making. I'm like, no, you know what? Maybe I won't quit now.
So I like to highlight a place every single month, if I can, where you can find lots of cool homebrews. So we'll move on to homebrew for now.
Oh, cool.
The one that I like the most, and this is called. I mean, I like them all. Okay, I love. All the ones we've highlighted before, we've highlights from those again. But I always forget to give Fandel his notice.
Oh yeah,
because Fandel.
You talk about Fandel all the time.
He has all the brand every at the end of the month. He has all the brand new games that came out, all the brand new demos, brand new pictures, brand new songs from the Atari 8-bit community. And so,
that's awesome.
There's a lot of good stuff here. Every game shows like. Who made it, when, and if there's something about it, like it's a port from like BBC Micro, it'll tell you on
here. Is that a port from BBC Micro?
No. I've just, and there's more Sokoban games. It's just whatever, anything good that comes out, License to Kill, which is funny because.
Oh my God, is that
this is a version.
A port of License to Kill?
Port of License to Kill from 1990 for the Atari 8-bit that never came. Oh, it's a conversion of BBC Micros. Here it is. Conversion by
Fandel.
I never knew about this one. That's a game we played on the ST.
Yeah, we had the ST version. I liked that ST game. It was fun.
Yeah, this may show up in my next month's hidden gem.
Oh, that's cool.
What? I just found out about this now. Anyway, yeah. It's a great place. Just if you're interested in Atari 8-bit games at all, go to Fandel's site. He makes his own games. He does all kinds of great stuff. It's a great place to look for stuff. That's right. Okay. So. Jonathan, in a video that I played in my Atari ST show number 2, Jonathan Thomas, who was the brilliant mind and programmer behind the Lotus 2 STE version, he has a new 8-way scrolling game called KV Taxi. Want me to play the video here?
Yeah.
So, Jonathan has this game on the STE.
This is
and neat. Basically you fly around, no shooting in this one. You're picking up people and taking them places in KV Taxi.
Oh, I love it.
And the other one that I wanted to show, and there's no
sound. This is cool. So it's like Crazy Taxi.
But it's Crazy Taxi, but it's also there's a game called Space Taxi on the Commodore 64 and the other computers that this is mimicking also. And what's it's just And the other one is Puckman, the Atari ST.
This is amazing.
STE version of Pac-Man.
Wow.
And
that's just a spinning image.
I don't know if I have any. I do have desktop audio going, so we can hear this. But it's spinning image just because there. And this say I. So also the same person who's doing that has made. This is by Jules G, on the Atari forums, has a game. An Asteroids emulator. Now, right now, it's a full emulator of Asteroids. Not like the Asteroids emulator on the Atari 8-bit that was optimized. It's not optimized yet. It's running Asteroids at 1 frame a second. So he's working, but this guy does all kinds of great stuff. He's also working on a Phoenix emulator. So those are my homebrew picks.
Oh, wow. That's your homebrew picks for the month. That's
yes.
Awesome. Okay.
Yes.
Are we focusing now on Atari 8-bit and ST homebrew?
For the most part, but I do other ones. It's just I didn't see anything that really catched my eye for the 2600 and 7800 yet. I do want to focus on all the other systems. I just didn't find anything right away that was finished that I thought was great. Now, I'm sure there are some out there. This is where I need people to send me in things if possible because I don't have time to look for everything. We do have, we do have a game for the 7800.
Okay.
Astro Wing.
Oh, let me check it out.
So what are we on to now, okay, Steve?
First, we had some technical difficulties, but we're back again. Now, I want to say, in the green screen behind us, we were showing the Into the Vertical Blank logo at the first part of the show. But now it is showing a picture that our grandfather painted of their backyard in Anaheim, which is one of my favorite places, in the world, and disappeared. And that actually is the cover of this month's, that's the thumbnail from this month as well, is behind us now. So that's what that is. It's their backyard, which was the greatest backyard ever because it was a mowed piece of grass. We didn't have anything like that except for a mowed piece of grass. Anyway, that's it. That's what that is back there. So what are your two gems?
Now, Papa wants to come in now, too.
What are your gems?
Okay, I got an ST and Atari 8-bit gem. So the first gem that I have is a game called Exodus for the Atari ST. It is a multi-directional shooter in the vein of Bosconian.
No. Before you say Bosconian, understand that I am a Bosconian connoisseur. So it's similar to Bosconian.
It's not exactly.
For two reasons.
Well, I'll show you close to Bosconian in certain ways. Here's the page from Atari Mania I'm showing right now. And then let's bring up. Here is the 8-bit chip version of Exodus. 8-way scrolling shooter. So it's got the radar, it's got the eight-way shooting, and see the little blue sections you need to shoot? Those are similar to the...
Oh, yeah, a little bit similar
to the... But it's not exactly. Now, Azarian is closer, but this plays better. And the reason that plays better, and I'll show you, I'll give a little video of Azarian so you can see that too. That's the one that we had. It only ever came out in a one-level demo, and I don't think it was finished. But it was also Bosco. But it had some quality hiccups because they didn't know how to get the SC to perform that well at the time for a game like that. But this is great because... And some people would say it's not great because of this, but I think it's great because the screen is only about 66% is game area. That speeds it up.
Right.
And then you have the
radar.
The radar. Now, of course, it would be great to be full screen, but it would just be slow on the SC without an SC need to do.
There's some really cool stuff on this. This is neat.
Neat game. So, let's go.
The sound effects reminded me of some like Better Dead Than Alien sound effects.
Does sound like Better Dead Than Alien a little bit, and which is also a good game. Let's see. There were some reviews of this. This was an 85% in ST format, a 4 out of 5 from ST Action, a superb from ST User, and the hard to please Atari Mania crowd with a 6.8 out of 10.
That's because they're looking at it from now instead of then. But this is 1990.
Right.
And not a lot. How many ST games are coming out in
90? A lot. But the thing about it is they know this is a license war game. So it's basically budget software by a user in 1990, and they're giving it great reviews. That's where these reviews come from.
Yeah. Sorry about the cough.
It's okay. So the next game is Atari 8-bit Hidden Gem. Mm. This is a game called...
Bacterion
by Tom Hudson and Kyle Peacock. Tom Hudson would go on to create many a piece of software for the Atari 8-bit in Analog Magazine, and also Degas, CAD 3D, I think...
maybe CyberPaint?
CyberPaint and 3DS Max for Autodesk.
And I believe CyberPaint, some of the code in CyberPaint is the basis for 3DS Max mod Autodesk. So, like, that's a pretty amazing pedigree. From the ST to from those applications, which were amazing on the ST, by the way. I used CyberPaint to do all sorts of computer graphics for our weird little indie movies we made at the end of high school and in college. But this is on the 8-bit.
This game is absolutely amazing for a time when no games were really coming out for the Atari 8-bit. I mean, there were some. In Europe, there were some. And one of my goals with the Atari 8-bit show, which is going to be coming up, but I don't have a lot of episodes ready yet, so I'm doing the countdown episodes for a little while, was to start the history of the Atari 8-bit in 1986. Now, starting in February of 1986. Why February of 1986? It's 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to do the ST starting in February of 1986. This is 40 years. Why start after the 8-bit died in the U.S.? Because most people don't know all the great stuff that came out for it.
So you're saying a bunch of great games came out for the 8-bit in 1986.
And beyond.
Actually, 1980. The XEGS or ZEGS came out in December 1987 or mid 1987, right?
Right.
And that was in the USA, but mostly in the UK. And that was a test, I believe, my research was correct, for Tramiel to see if they could make a computer video game hybrid.
Right.
And the answer was no, but it didn't work. But
if people would buy it, and they did sell out of them, but it didn't sell in huge numbers, sold a couple hundred thousand.
And they tried to sell them at Federated Group, by the way, and it didn't work. But it was their fault, I think, that it didn't work. But anyway, the ZEGS came. Sorry about that. Ow. So the ZEGS comes out in the UK in 1987, and it sort of is a rebirth of the Atari 8-bit as a gaming platform.
You even saw games
in the UK.
You even saw in the US, you actually saw games like Arkanoid, Gauntlet, Summer Games, and Winter Games that had been not that were finished and never put out. And new games finished by Sculptured Software and stuff start coming out for the Zegs and the Atari 8-bit. And I kind of want to talk about that part of the
history. To me, that's a really interesting history of the Atari 8-bit in the UK, because it's not really mentioned. I mean, it wasn't big, right? I mean, it was
moderate.
People in the UK talk about the systems. I think Tony Longworth is the only guy that I know of that had it. He liked the Atari and he had an Atari 400, but I think his friend did too. But I think a lot of people, it was the other machines, right? And the Commodore 64.
Right. Well, of course it was. The XCGS was never big there, but you'll see things in the history that I'm hoping to become where like Kickoff came out for the Atari 8-bit.
Wow.
Like, these games came out and they like a few cassettes were made and then they were put out.
But the point is, it's not simultaneous when the US. So the games in the US are made between 79 and about 85 or 86, right? Then it kind of tapers off. Nosmo stuff is made. I think the last big game I ever bought for the Atari 8-bit was Ultima 4, and I think in 1986, in like March or April 1986. But it was after that. So that sort of fades away, and then it picks up again in the UK for a short amount of time. So they're not, it doesn't happen at the same time.
There were games early in the UK and early in the US, and then there was games later in the US because more were sold in the US than the UK of the 400s and 800s. Then the US, it goes dead.
Dark.
And then the UK still has games coming up, budget games and stuff. And then the XCGS and the XE system spurred new games to come out.
I mean, the good example of this, maybe we can show a video of this, is the Star Wars arcade game,
right,
where there's a Parker Brothers version that comes out for like the 8-bit and 5200 in like 1983, 1984, and then a new version,
Domark,
in like 1987 or 1988, and it's vastly better than the original one, right? Or is it better?
Better in certain ways, yes.
Okay,
yes.
But they're different games. It's not like one. Nope. Not like someone took the original Parker Brothers one and re-released it.
Nope.
They might have even known that it existed. And they
did that with a James Bond game. That's the only game I know of that was re-released that way.
The dichotomy about the Atari computers is very interesting, the history that. But they're sold in such small numbers, even here, compared to the Commodore 64, but sold like 30 million. And I think that the Atari 8-bit was probably 1 or 2 million. Like
Probably.
Yeah.
I think they say all together they probably sold about 5 million, including when you go to Brazil and Poland.
Yeah, in Germany.
Germany and things like that. And that's why you get a lot of German games for the ST and 8-bit, and you get a lot of Polish games for the 8-bit, because it was like the machine that everybody was trying to program on in Poland and the C64.
Anyway, like I said, I'm in the vertical blank.
Into the vertical blank. All right.
Before we go into the outro song, I just want to invite you to join us next month for a brand new series named Fill in the Blanks.
We were children of the Silicon Revolution, an X generation conscripted to fight the console and home computer wars. A product of an analog 70s childhood, we came of digital age in the 80s, believing we could affect the world 8 bits at a time. Armed with joysticks, full stroke keyboards, Jolt Cola, and MTV haircuts, we proceeded into the vertical blank. There we stayed up late at night, devising incantations from D&D rulebooks and beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code. Video games were the match, and programming was the fuse, as the infinite possibilities of the digital world exploded into the internet age to come. We are Generation Atari.
Into the vertical blank.